ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome into the ESPN College Football Podcast for April 13th. I'm Adam Rittenberg, joined by my friend and great colleague, Chris Lowe. We'll be talking spring football, you know, Dabo Swinney's latest comments, and much more here. It's a fun time of year as we're kind of in the throes of spring football around the country. Some teams have already wrapped up their practices. Some are wrapping up this weekend. We also have the NFL draft coming up in 2 weeks' time. You're barely 2 weeks away from that, and so we'll be breaking that down a little bit. Today's the letter L on the podcast, so we'll talk a little LSU, Louisville, and maybe some other L teams and terms around the great sport of college football. But I wanted to have Chris on today because he has been on the road, as only he does, and in different parts of the country, but especially in South Carolina, Chris. And as I go through my Chris Lowe geography, I know you spent a good chunk of your life in that state, and you spent a good chunk of the last week or so in the state at both Clemson and South Carolina. How was that trip, just overall, just being able to get back out, first of all, and spending time with those two programs?
Well, it was great to meet and visit with Shane Beamer and Dabo Swinney and a lot of the coaches on both those staffs. You know, it's Clemson has been a juggernaut, obviously, nationally, Adam, now for the last, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years under Dabo. And then at South Carolina, Shane's trying to get South Carolina back to relevancy again. You know, that I don't know that we're going to see the Gamecocks get to where Spurrier had them, where they finished in the top 10 for 3 straight years, because that was unprecedented heights for the Gamecocks throughout their history. But, you know, the way they finished the season last year and scratched out 7 wins playing 4 quarterbacks, and let's be honest, 4 that probably wouldn't start for any other team in the SEC, a lot of momentum in that program. And I tell you, the thing, though, that sticks out to me about both those places, and we know you've been to tons of places in the ACC, the Big Ten, the SEC, Pac-12. The facilities that South Carolina and Clemson have built are second to anybody. I mean, they are second to none. They are unbelievable. I mean, the player amenities, the locker rooms, the weight rooms, the training tables. I mean, if I'm a prospect and I walk onto either one of those campuses, and again, I know everybody's got great facilities for the most part. South Carolina went from perhaps the worst facilities in the SEC to some of the best with the new Rice building. And Clemson, of course, was on the cutting edge when they built the Reeves facility there several years ago. I mean, I did not play putt-putt with Dabo when I was there on the outdoor putt-putt course, but the only thing missing at Clemson, Adam, is a lazy river. They've got everything else.
Now, did you go down the slide or play any wiffle ball? Because I know you're a mean wiffle ball player.
Full transparency, I did not go down the slide this time. I have gone down the slide before, and we're in the business of telling the truth, and I absolutely just completely busted my rear end when I went down the slide. I'm just thankful that it's not on video, because it was not very athletic looking. But the funny thing is, you know, Dabo goes down the slide a lot when they're going to the practice field, because the offices for Clemson, the coaches' offices are upstairs, the locker room's on the first floor. A lot of the coaches go down that slide, and you can sort of hear them screeching as they go down the slide, because that's the key. If you don't screech to sort of hold the sides there toward the bottom, you're going to bust your butt like I did. And it's funny, you'll hear them say, they'll come down the slide and they'll say, hey, the slide's fast today. It's fast. So everybody sort of has that warning before they go down the slide, but it's something to behold. And they're actually doing more work. They're adding on now at Clemson, doing some things. They're going to fill in some other areas and build out. So it clearly is an arms race when it comes to facilities and college football.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, we go to these schools on a somewhat regular basis, but if you haven't been for a while, you're going to see something new, especially, you know, given the pandemic, we were not as much. And so if you haven't been to Clemson for 2 or 3 years, it's going to look a little different. Obviously, South Carolina looks dramatically different from if you had gone there in 2019, not just with the people, but with the facilities. And definitely want to get back to South Carolina and your time there with Shane Beamer and Spencer Rattler and others. but wanted to start with Dabo and with Clemson, because you know you had a chance to talk with him and he opened up as Dabo you know tends to do, but only with certain people like the great Chris Lowe on a lot of topics. And you know, he went big picture here about the state of college athletics and football and Power Five. And just wanted to read a few of his comments to you and get your thoughts on what he had to say. You know, Dabo said there needs to be a complete blow up, especially in football. I think there will be some type of break in another division. Right now, you've got everybody in one group and it's not feasible. He also says there's so much bureaucracy and you can't get everything done in a real time manner. It's frustrating. The communication is not good. The rules are outdated. There have been a lot of positives when it comes to the scholarships, but you've got all these people voting on things and it's not apples to apples. He also talked about how he's not against NIL, but is still very much against the professionalization of college athletics and pay for play. You know, Dabo said, I'm for anything that incentivizes education. People will come after me because I've always said that, and I'm against the professionalism of college athletics, and I am. Kids don't know what they don't know. That's a slippery slope if you professionalize college athletics. So, Chris, as you're sitting there and hearing this and then trying to process everything that Dabo said, what stood out most to you? Because he said some of these things before, but was very pointed and, again, went big picture. You kind of scorched earth on the landscape right now of college football and college athletics.
I wasn't totally surprised, Adam, because I have talked to Dabo about some of these things in the past, as have several in the media. And he probably did go to a few places in this sit down that he has not gone before. But I mean, knowing Dabo as I do and having gotten to know him pretty well over the years, I'm not surprised. And I'm still not surprised because he's one of the rare coaches, because you've heard some of these type of things from coaches behind the cloak of anonymity, as have I, right? Dabo is one of those rare coaches. If he thinks it and feels it, he's going to say it. And he's not going to apologize for it, whether 10% agree with him or 90%. That's just sort of who he is. I guess what stood out is he genuinely is worried that it's going to become college football. And I've thought this for a while, is going to become even more so the minor league for professional football, with salaries. And as he pointed out, he said, so if a kid drops two passes, we just cut him. You know, if you're getting paid, if you genuinely are getting paid, you cut him. What does that do for kids who are trying to get their education or to get their degree? You know, are fewer kids going to not get degrees if they're transferring around? Or the tampering part, the ability to tamper now with agents and attorneys representing kids is something that he really hates, you know, and I've had several other coaches off the record tell me that already that they've had some of their more promising younger kids approach them and say, you know, coach, I've had this attorney, that attorney call me and say, hey, get in the portal. If you get in the portal, I can get you this deal and this deal at this school or that deal at that school. And I think those are the things that Dabo abhors the most, the possibility of those things happen, which more and more of that's going to happen because, as he says, there's just no rules. There's nothing right now to regulate any of it. And, you know, every state's different too, Adam. You know, if you're in some states, as you're a high school kid, you can accept money right now. Some states you can't. And I think that's what he's talking about, sort of the lack of continuity and that type of thing. I think the things that probably really jumped out to people was his comments about the president of Delta makes more than the baggage people. And the fact that, you know, it's a capitalist society, he's not going to apologize for the fact that he makes $9.5 million, that he doesn't set the market. And some people have called him a hypocrite for that. But I think what he was trying to point out, rightfully or wrongfully so, is that the salaries that coaches make right now are sort of what they are. You know, and if you're a big time college coach, at even programs that haven't been elite. You know, I'll just use Ole Miss for an example. Ole Miss, you know, has not been a school that's won SEC championships or really been nationally relevant. They, you know, they had a streak there under Hugh Freeze, and Lane won 10 games last year. They're paying their head coach $7.5 million a year. I mean, if you told me that 15 years ago, Adam, there's no way I would have believed that. So coaches are all making, and I ask you point blank, are coaches making too much money? And because that's the thing you hear now, and you know, he just was not going to back down from that, but he's who he is. And I'm not surprised to hear some of those things from him. And, you know, I agree with, you know, if you ask me, if you pump truth serum in me, I agree with some of what he says. I don't necessarily agree with everything, but I do believe that he understands. I think where he's probably been mischaracterized the most by people in the media, by other coaches, is that he is not saying that I do not believe once a kid gets on campus, he should be able to benefit from his name, image, likeness. You know, Clemson, Adam, just rolled out, or is getting ready to roll out, one of the more aggressive NIL programs in the country.
Right.
And he said, hey, I think it's good these guys, Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, can make money when they have a platform, once they get here to school and have a platform. That's good, because 98% of kids that go to college never play in the NFL. It's the manipulating kids to come to school, you know, whether it's 100,000, whether it's 500,000, where it's 8 million, as we've heard recently, for some player, at least one player. That's what he has the biggest problem with.
Right. And that's, again, a common refrain. I did want to ask you about the effectiveness of those comments in relation to what you just mentioned about his own salary. So when a coach, again, who's an expert in the field, that's his job, is to understand the realm of college football and recruiting and all these things that have kind of been turned upside down in the last couple of years. But when he says it from the perspective of somebody who's making what he makes, is it still effective for the audience? Because again, I think there is some truth here. And I want to get into the whole, Power Five splitting off into divisions conversation, but just in terms of the professionalization comments and the education comments, is it effective when these coaches who are making what they make go in as hard as Dabo did with you and has in the past on these type of topics?
Yeah, we're going to find out. I think we're going to find out probably in recruiting over the next few years. And there are going to be some moms and grandmoms and dads who love the fact that he's pushing education, you know, and then there are going to be some who say, wait a minute, you know, you're telling me a guy's making $9.5 million is not on board with a kid signing a contract in high school for a couple hundred thousand dollars and coming to school. And that kid's not going to come to Clemson because of that, especially now that you have attorneys and agents so involved. Every marquee kid's going to have an attorney, an NIL attorney. So I think it will play with some. It won't play with others. The percentages, I don't know. I mean, I know this last class, they've got a couple kids that were freshmen in this class that could have gone anywhere in the country. You know, the quarterback, Klubnik from Texas, and I got to watch him practice. Well, he is a really good-looking prospect. And he will push DJ. I'm not going to butcher DJ's last name. He will push him this year. And Dabo said that he was. And that's what they want is competition. That's where they sort of set themselves apart, much like Ohio State and Alabama. Adam, is the competition on the practice field over the last few years because they recruited so many good players. But to answer your question, I guess the proof's going to be in the pudding over the next few recruiting classes to see, you know, how those comments and him being so strong in those areas will play with recruits and moms and grandmoms and dads and uncles, et cetera.
Dabo mentioned this idea of breaking away of a super league. Didn't say in those terms, but essentially referred to a break in another division for the top of the Power Five. He says here, Alabama has different problems than Middle Tennessee, but we're trying to make them all the same, and it's just not. I think we both agree with that. And you've talked to other coaches who have referred to this. I guess I'm struggling to see how it works. You know, who is in it? How big is it? Is it every Power Five school? Is there a cutoff? Are they all in the SEC? I mean, all these things have been brought up in the last year, you know, almost year now with this, after this last round of realignment. And I'm still trying to figure out how it would work. Do you have any sense after talking to Dabo or other coaches on what this super league or division would actually look like and how it would function?
A lot of coaches say it, but they never give you that specific plan of how it would work, to your point. I've heard that from a lot. I mean, I've had multiple conversations with Nick Saban about this, and he said on record he thinks college football needs a commissioner to where some of these rules and things are going to be more consistent with the bigger schools. He's even pitched, you know what, why not play everybody like they do in the NFL, you know, everybody that's, you know, in your league or in that division best you can. See, I think we've already sort of taken a step toward that with OU and Texas going to the SEC. I think that was sort of the first step to the Super League. But Adam, there's a lot of things out there. There are TV contracts, there are contracts and that schools have or with conferences right now. I don't know how you navigate all that. I do believe, though, we're going to see a super division at some point. You'll still be working in the business. I won't when we get there. I mean, I don't think we're going to see that in 2 or 3 years, but I do think that's where we're headed to some degree. And as the NCAA becomes weaker and weaker and has less and less teeth, I guess it's fewer and fewer teeth. I do think we're probably headed in that direction, but I don't know. And even he said, I don't know what the number is. Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 60? Is it an NCAA tournament type number of teams? But because even if it's 60, that's not all the Power Five teams.
Right.
Who gets left out and sort of what's that based on? So I don't know, but I do hear that. And I think you've probably heard that too from coaches and administrators around football, that they think that's where big time, quote unquote, major football is headed in college to ensure that there is more continuity, commissioner, everybody's sort of playing a similar type of schedule, and then you crown a champion. See, I think two things. I think that the OU and Texas going to the SEC, that expansion, and I also think when the powers that be finally figure out on how to expand the playoff, that's another step toward a super division or super league of college football.
Yeah, I think the idea of the details are going to be fascinating. If you're somebody who likes, you know, if you're an English soccer fan, you like relegation or you like realignment, you are going to love the drama surrounding how do we get in? Where's the cutoff? Who's going to barely get in and who's going to get left out? Because that is going to be absolutely wild. And there's going to be so much money flying around. It's going to be political because, you know, you even see it at the bottom of the FBS. You know, to be in the FBS versus FCS, which is a lot, you know, you get a lot less attention. If this is going to be the league in college football, the group, it's going to get so wild just to see the maneuvers that take place with these schools and the presidents and the politicians and the coaches and the ADs to try to get in there. So definitely an important conversation that we'll keep having. Before we move on, I quickly want to mention a quality ESPN podcast that may interest you. Check out First Draft with Mel Kiper Jr., Todd McShay, and Field Yates. Every Monday and Thursday, the guys are keeping tabs on the NFL Draft, which is right around the corner. You can listen to First Draft wherever you get your podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. I wanted to ask you about the team. You mentioned the competition quarterback with DJ Uiagalelei, I did get that name right, and Cade Klubnik, the dynamic freshman from Texas, incoming recruit. But overall, this is such a fascinating team because, you know, Dabo loses his coordinators. He goes internal for both replacements, really doubling down on the Clemson way. Watching them practice, you know, this was the most disrespected 10-win team in the country last year. What was wrong with Clemson? What did you see actually on the field from the Tigers?
Well, first of all, you being a Northwestern grad, I would expect you to get DJ's pronunciation of his last name correct. So I'll try it. Uiagalelei.
I'm close to that. Uiagalelei, I think it is.
Okay. Well, again, you having that Northwestern degree, you're way ahead of me. But no, you're right. And even Spurrier, I talked to Spurrier the week that I went there. And of course, typical Spurs say, "Hey, tell Dabo he won 10 games, bad year." That's, you know, then when you get to 10 wins and it's a bad year, that maybe you're right there, you've arrived, you're right there among the elite, which he really is sort of right. You know, I mean, Spurrier has joked in the past, or joked that Saban has joked with him that if he ever loses 3 games again in Tuscaloosa, that they'll run him right out of town. And typical Spurrier is, I think he was joking, but I'm not sure. They'd gone to the playoffs 6 straight years Clemson had before last year. And I didn't really think at 4-3, Adam, that they would get to double-digit wins, you know, because they struggled mightily on offense. Quarterback play was not good. They didn't play great around him. But they did, you know, and the games they lost are all easily winnable games. I mean, there was a 3-3 game against Georgia. I think NC State beat them, what, double overtime, and Pitt game was – you know, closer for a while. And so I think there will be a much better team this year. And I think they'll be right there knocking on the door of the playoff. For one, their front 4 and 7, or their front 7 on defense will be, if not the best front 7 in college football, among the top 2 or 3. They've got, Dabo said they've got 5 or 6 guys in the defensive line that will play in the NFL. And that's sort of Georgia-esque, Alabama-esque, you know, to have that kind of depth in defensive line. And even at linebacker, you know, Trent Simpson's a guy that maybe because of the defensive lineman hasn't gotten the respect he deserves, but he can play anywhere on the field. He can rush, he can cover. They're going to play him more in the box this year. So defensively, they'll be in every game. And I don't think the pressure is going to be on Clemson to score 30 or 35 points every game to win. But they, and Dabo was the first to say, and haven't had a chance to watch him. And granted, it was just more of a glorified walkthrough as they got ready for their spring game. But they've got some guys they brought in. I think they're going to help them on offense. The kid from Myrtle Beach, the receiver, he's one of the top receivers in the country. Now, he's hurt this spring and not going through spring. He tore his ACL. I think he's got a chance to be back and help them. But they played a lot of freshmen at receiver last year. Those guys have got to grow up. I think Shipley will have a breakthrough type season this year at running back. The key is an offensive line. They're bringing everybody back. They got a lot of experience. They didn't play great in the offensive line last year. Now, part of that is they didn't have great quarterback play. That's the area I think they got to improve the most in. And going back to your question about the transfer portal, you know, Dabo is anti-transfer portal too, but he did tell me that, you know what, everybody in America at some point will have to use it some. We will use it to fill a gap. And this May, they're going to be actively looking for an offensive lineman who's got experience that they can bring in and plug in right away on that offensive line because he says we're down one.
Yeah, and that offensive line to me has been the biggest question mark at Clemson really the last few years. Even when they were making the playoff, that was the area the coaches would spotlight and say, you know what, we can take advantage of them up front on offense, and if they can take a jump, that's going to help whoever's at quarterback. And certainly, you know, those talented running backs that you mentioned, I agree that Will Shipley could have a huge year for the Tigers if he can stay healthy. Did want to get your quick thoughts on South Carolina, though, your trip there, spending time with Shane, and then obviously Spencer Rattler, the big news coming in from Oklahoma as a transfer quarterback to shore up that position, at least for the 2022 season. What was it like just spending time with them and how much, I mean, they went 7-6 last year. Shane got the Mayo bath after beating North Carolina in the bowl game. I think there's a lot of optimism. I don't know if they're going to be a real challenger in the SEC East, given that Georgia's sitting there. But where is South Carolina in your mind coming off of that first year with Spencer Rattler on the team and now going forward?
Well, much more momentum than they've had in a while. Much more of a positive culture that everyone's on the same page. Shane's one of those guys, just, and I've known Shane for 20 plus years, that just sort of, he resonates with his players. He relates, you know, he's in there at 6 a.m. every morning working out. Those guys see that. He's very much involved in all aspects of their lives and is not a guy that's, you know, there's different ways to coach football teams. And Shane's not a guy, he's going to hold them accountable, but he's not a guy that's going to beat up on them. And I think that team really sort of responded to that. You saw that last year, November, down the stretch, because they had some bad losses. You know, Tennessee beat the brakes off of them, Texas A&M beat the brakes off of them. But they didn't let those losses just destroy them. They came back and played their best football in November. I thought that was pretty telling about the culture that Shane's created there. I'm like you. I don't think they're anywhere close to challenging Georgia in the East. They've got to stack a few more recruiting classes on top of each other, and they're going to have to do well in Georgia. You know, Georgia cleans up in that state, but there's enough good football players in that state that you can get guys that Georgia doesn't necessarily want that can be key players for you. And you look at South Carolina over the years when they've been good, they've been able to get some key guys out of Georgia. So I think that's, he likes his staff. He made some changes. There were some changes made. And that's, you know, that I just think that they have a chance to make a move. I've told a few people, I think in that division, the winner of that Tennessee South Carolina game, I think they play late October, early November. I think the winner of that game has the chance to make the biggest move in the East next year. Because I think both those programs in a lot of ways mirror each other. Both had first-year coaches last year. Both teams that probably overachieved in a lot of ways were better than people thought they were going to be. And now both of them have established quarterbacks going into the season. You know, you got Spencer Rattler coming over from Oklahoma, who's won a lot of games, played a lot of big stages. And you got Hendon Hooker of Tennessee, who was not the starter going into the season last year, but clearly played his way into that role. And now everyone knows he's the starter. So I think, again, Adam, those two teams in the East sort of mirror each other. But all eyes are going to be on Rattler. And I met with Rattler for a while, very impressed with sort of his approach, how hungry he is. I mean, he's clearly got a chip on his shoulder. He knows what people said about him. It did not end at Oklahoma the way he wanted it to. He knows what the narrative is out there about him. Talked to a lot of his teammates about him. He's you can sort of see he's got that look in his eye that he wants to sort of rewrite this final chapter of his college career and sort of write it the way he wants to write it.
Yeah, and certainly never thought he would be at a different school. I didn't think he'd be in college football this year, but this is the way it played out. He has that opportunity now with a new team, a team that has momentum, like you mentioned. And you know, Tennessee, South Carolina will meet actually November 19th in Columbia. That's South Carolina's final SEC game before finishing their regular season at Clemson, the other school that you visited on your trip. And you know, Chris, you mentioned culture building, and it's something we hear around college football. And it's certainly something that is still appears to be in a work in progress in Austin, Texas, where Steve Sarkisian, the second year coach, is trying to instill a different mindset, you know, some different values for a Texas program that we all agree has underachieved here as of late, and is preparing for a move to the SEC, and you're trying to get back into the national spotlight. And you know, there was news this week out of Austin as you know, fifth year defensive lineman Moro Ojomo had made some comments and last week actually, and then it was announced by Steve Sarkisian that he would not be speaking to the media because of what he said. And I'll read some of the comments here and wanted to get your reaction to them, Chris. This is again a veteran defensive lineman for Texas saying, of his teammates, they're 18 to 22 year olds that want to chase women, want to chase money, want to chase alcohol, and they don't see the future. They're distracted by what's in front of them. It's such a hard thing, especially guys that haven't been in a winning culture. They're always talking about coming in here and changing stuff. It's like ingrained. You're uprooting what? 10 years of bleep. That's just been let go. So some very honest comments there from Moro Ojomo, fifth year senior for Texas. And again, we won't be hearing from him, at least in the media, for a while. I'm curious what you thought when you saw those comments, and also just the action to not let him speak, because I think we both agree to it. You know, there's probably some truth to what he had to say, given what's gone on at Texas here the last, you know, few years, or in his mind, really the last decade.
Well, I don't think that, first of all, I don't think he's making any of that up, man. And why would you embellish or make up something like that, knowing how viral something that's going to go? I mean, he's speaking his mind, and we can sit and debate all day whether that's something he needs to sit down with Steve Sarkisian and talk about his office or players and leaders on the team. You know, sometimes it's best to keep things in house, you know, especially in today's age. You know, as soon as you say something like that, it's everywhere. And, you know, I think probably saying he's not going to be talking to the media anymore makes it an even bigger story. You know, you're creating almost another news cycle, which I don't think that, if you're looking at it from a coach or a program's perspective, I don't think that's always the smartest thing in the world, especially when a kid's just saying, hey, this is what's happened to here. But, you know, you're talking about four head coaches at Texas in, what, less than 10 years? You know, and that's not even counting all the different assistant coaches they've had. But, you know, what he said, you know, the first thing I thought about, Adam, when I read that is that video that popped up last year, what were they on the bus, on the plane, getting ready to go home, and Bo Davis is just absolutely lighting into the guys about, hey, we're not, you know, can't say exactly what he said, but in essence, it's not a picnic. We're not at a picnic. It's not playland. Really, what he said is not a lot different than what the kids said. You know, they just maybe said it in different ways. So clearly it's not where Sark wants it when you start talking about culture and getting everybody on the same page and redoing or sort of, I should say, undoing some of the issues they've had there. But all that said, man, there's a reason. Texas is a, everybody talks about it. You got everything in place at Texas to win. Well, I know pretty well a couple of guys who coached there, and there are a lot of issues. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen, a ton of cooks in the kitchen, a lot of people who want to have their hands involved there in that football program. And I don't think it's a coincidence that you've had several guys come in there and have some of these kinds of issues.
The two words that jump out to me, the one that you just mentioned, the politics and the entitlement. And that's a bad combination when you're trying to turn things around, because I think, you know, it's obviously a place with great tradition, but it's been a long time since Texas was a true national player on a consistent basis. And that's why they hired Sark, is to get them to be competing for national championships and get into the college football playoff. And so I think there is a lot of truth to what Ajomo said. And, you know, again, I agree with you that by, you know, basically coming out and like Sark saying he shouldn't have done that in public, you know, you don't talk about family business. You know, now we're all talking about it, but I think what he said will still resonate. And it wasn't like he's a freshman popping off, you know, in his first media appearance. This is a guy who has been at Texas for 5 years under multiple coaches and has seen the evolution of that program and the struggles to establish a different approach, a different mindset and culture, and how they're still very much, you know, kind of in that process. So it'd be interesting to see what happens going forward. Certainly this season is a big one for them, because the Big 12, I don't know your thoughts on this, Chris. You know, to me, it's a very wide open league, even though, you know, Baylor and Oklahoma State were really good last year. They played in that great championship game, both finished in the top 10. They both won New Year's Six bowls, but, you know, they both lost a lot too. Oklahoma State on defense, you know, Baylor, you're kind of on both sides of the ball. You know, could Texas win the Big 12? I guess stranger things have happened, but it does feel like a wide open league to me.
Well, it is. And, you know, the team that seems to always get lost in the shuffle is Oklahoma State, what Gundy's done there. I mean, every year they seem to be the team that no one's talking about, that come November, they're at least in the conversation, you know, which tells you a little bit about the job he's done there. And I think he's probably done, when you look at that league in particular, he's probably done more with less, you know, as anybody. I would say, I would put Gary Patterson during his heyday at TCU right up there with him. Of course, Gary now in Austin, interestingly enough, you know, is that a good move for Steve Sarkisian? Is it a bad move? I tend to think having a guy like Gary who knows that league and knows defense is probably something that's going to be much more of a positive. Now, things start to go south. You know what fans and donors are going to be saying, you know, well, we got a veteran coach right there and Gary Patterson, let's just slide him in. You know, that's just part of it. I guess that's part of the, when you decide to bring in somebody like that, a veteran guy, that's part of the gamble for Steve Sarkisian. But no, I mean, they've recruited, you know, recruiting rankings are what they are. And, you know, the two of us have had conversations on stars and recruiting rankings ad nauseum over the last decade. And It's a fact that you're not going to win the national championship unless you consistently finish in the top 10 in recruiting. That's we've seen that play out. But just because you get – here's the flip side of that no one talks about, Adam. Just because you get a lot of five stars and you consistently win the top 10 does not guarantee that you're going to be a nationally relevant program. And Texas just hasn't more times than not. I looked this up. They haven't won more than 8 games since 18. I mean, when, you know, again, with all their resources in that state and the fertile recruiting ground, there's no way that they should go that many years and not win more than 8 games. But the facts are facts. But no, I think that league, you've had some coaching turnover. You know, you got Sonny Dykes taking over now at TCU. I think what Aranda's done at Baylor, they've just, you know, been solid. You know, they're always going to be good on defense. Even though Oklahoma State lost a lot of guys, I wouldn't count out Mike Gundy and the Cowboys. And then OU, Brent Venables taking over, part of that other, the turnover I was talking about. I love the staff, you know, that he's assembled there in Norman. So I wouldn't be surprised at anybody that wins that league. But I'll say this about Texas. As they get ready to transition into the SEC, OU too, they better get it right, because it's, you know, it's really getting ready to start to get real for them. And whether it's a year, 2 years, or whether it's after the contract, that's going to be a tough sledding for them if they don't get better and the culture there does not improve. Because when you get into the SEC, and I don't know, Adam, how they're going to do this, the scheduling, I feel confident they will add a league game and go to 9. Now, will they go to pods? But these next couple of years for Texas and Steve Sarkisian are pretty critical.
Yeah, they're absolutely critical. And you mentioned that stat, no more than 8 wins since 2018. I'll go one bigger. Since in the last decade, Texas ranks 53rd nationally in winning percentage. 53rd. That's about right in the middle of the FBS, and certainly not acceptable going forward, especially as they get ready to transition to the SEC, as you mentioned. Chris, you and I and some of our colleagues participated in a roundtable, as we do pretty much every week, earlier this week. And I wanted to call attention to one of the items that we both weighed in on, and especially your answer, and that's the game that we're most looking forward to next year. Now, we could always pick a Michigan, Ohio State, and Alabama, Auburn, you know, the kind of traditional in-conference games, Tennessee, Florida, but you and I both picked non-conference games. And I think that's typically what I think of when I'm looking forward to a season as the games that will take place early. I went with Miami and Texas A&M, which is going to take place September 17th in College Station. You know, two teams that are trying to take that next step under dynamic coaches, great recruiters in Mario Cristobal and Jimbo Fisher. But the game you picked, Chris, really interests me. And it's one I've thought about a lot. I'm actually out here in Pac-12 country right now, but it's featuring the defending Pac-12 champion Utah going to Gainesville to take on Florida in Coach Billy Napier's debut with the Gators. And I think this is such an interesting game on both sides, but in my mind, it's more important for Utah because the Pac-12 hasn't won these games, and the Pac-12's trying to get respect, and Florida's vulnerable. I know they're on the road. But this is a game, in my view, Chris, that Utah should win. And if they don't, it could be that same old, well, the Pac-12 is so far behind everybody else. Whereas if they win it, okay, Utah, which to me looks like the clear favorite in the Pac-12, we could be talking about them as a fringe playoff contender. What jumped out to you in selecting that game as one that you're really looking forward to in the 2022 season?
Just what you said, that as big a game as this is for Utah, it might be a bigger game for the Pac-12. Because I think they have as good a chance as anybody in that league to get back to the playoff. I mean, I guess it's Washington in the 17 seasons, the last time the Pac-12 has produced a playoff team. I like what Kyle Whittingham has built there, how physical they are, and just the way they run the football and play defense. And as you said, they won the Pac-12 last year and really played a lot of impressive football down the stretch. Another program that's got a lot of momentum going into the offseason, going into next year. But no, I agree. This is a game for the Pac-12 and for Utah to say, all right, we're going against a team that's got a first-year coach, a team that had a miserable season last year, a team that is trying to build back in the Florida Gators. And granted, the Swamp's not an easy place to play, but if they're going to have a chance to go to the playoff, this is the kind of win they got to have, Adam, on their resume. And I don't know how good Florida's going to be next year. I know Billy Napier is a really good football coach, but I don't know where the Gators stack up with the rest of the SEC. So right now, maybe they win 10 games, maybe they win 7 games. All that said, this is a game that the Utes have to win if they're going to have a chance to be in the playoff. Even if they were to win let's say they were to lose a game somewhere along the way in the Pac-12, but still win the Pac-12 championship, but they have a loss on their resume to Florida, it would be hard for them to make a 4-team playoff. That's why I picked it. And I also want to see where the Gators are, in that first game under Napier against a tough, as I said, physical opponent that won't be intimidated. Utah's not going to walk on the Swamp and be intimidated. That's just not characteristic of what college teams have been like. So that's the reason. Here's the other reason. It has nothing to do with football. And I absolutely hate these teams playing these non-conference games at neutral sites. And I love seeing a team from the west part of the country coming all the way across the country and playing on another team's campus. To me, that's the fabric of college football for the fans, for the teams, in those early games. And I understand why teams play in Atlanta and the Cotton Bowl and some of these neutral sites. It's worth a lot of money. You know, it's sort of a cool event to do that. But once we get away, Adam, from, you know, the Pac-12 versus SEC, the Big Ten versus Pac-12 non-conference games on campuses, then I think that's a real blow for college football. So I love the fact that you're going to have the Utes fans in Gainesville, and then the next year you're going to have the Gators fans out in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that, and it does add to the game and the pageantry around it. So it just, to me, it feels like the Pac-12 doesn't have too many of these games, especially against the SEC, where they really should win. It reminds me a lot of the Oregon-Auburn opener in 19. That was at a neutral site, obviously, down at AT&T Stadium. I was at that game, and Oregon controlled the game, and then they kind of took their foot off the gas in the fourth quarter, and Auburn, behind Bo Nix, who's now a Pac-12 quarterback at Oregon, found a way to win that one. It felt like a missed opportunity for Oregon and for the Pac-12. You know, no one really expects Oregon to beat Georgia in Atlanta. You know, that'll be a tall order, but this is one I think the Pac-12 can get, especially with its best team, even though they're going on the road to Gainesville. So excited for that one. You know, Chris, as you know, on the podcast, as we march through the offseason, we're taking a look at a letter every week, the ABCs of college football, as we get ready for the 2022 season. And today's episode of the ESPN College Football Podcast is brought to you by the letter L. And so when you think of L in football, you think of linebackers, you think line of scrimmage, you think of laterals, some great, great lateral plays over the years. I wanted to ask you about some of the teams with the letter L. And four of the five in the FBS are in the state of Louisiana. And certainly the one that's getting the most attention is LSU, with the Brian Kelly era, you know, starting. You know, they started practice. You know, Brian has made some comments that have gotten some traction about his exit from Notre Dame. But just from this program, which we know it doesn't take much. They always have talent. They have the ability to flip it. That's what Ed Orgeron did. Probably didn't get enough credit for that. What do you expect from the start of the Brian Kelly era at LSU?
Well, much like Utah and Florida, they play right out of the gate. They play a non-conference game. I think it's going to be pretty telling, really, for both teams against Florida State. So I think we find out a lot about LSU early on. We find out a lot about Mike Norvell and the Seminoles. So I think that's one of those games that, you know, to start the Brian Kelly era, maybe that sets the tone. Obviously, it's not the end all. I don't know what to think about LSU in his first year. They lost several players. They brought several in. You know, it's a transition type year. But you're right. I mean, Ed Orgeron, you look at what he did very quickly. And you're 1,000% right. Ed never got the credit he deserved for that. I mean, he got more grief for some of the things he said, the way he talked, you know, some of the things that happened off the field. But to flip that the way he did, and I think there's just no way to undervalue the fact that three coaches in the last 18 years there have won national championships. That's not coincidental. I mean, it's everything's in place there to win at the highest level. And two of those coaches, Adam, aren't even coaches anymore.
Right.
Les Miles and Ed Orgeron. So I do think Brian, with the kind of coach he is, the track record he had, and the way they will recruit, you talk about a place you ought to be able to recruit to is LSU. People ask me all the time. I'm sure you get the same question. What's the best job in the country? What's the best job in the SEC? Well, there are a lot of them. But LSU, if you step 1,000 feet away and look at everything it takes to win at a high level, I think the recruiting talent, where they are geographically, the fact that all those kids in Louisiana grow up wanting to be LSU Tigers, that to me is right up there at the top of Georgia and Alabama as being one of the best jobs in the country. I think you add the fact that Kelly, you know, regardless of the way it ended it at Notre Dame or what have you, his experience and his track record, I do think he will flip it pretty quickly. I have a hard time, though, seeing them be a double-digit win team this year. I just don't think he's able to flip it that quickly.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I'm fascinated to see how the quarterback room shakes out with Miles Brennan still there, and then Jaden Daniels coming in from ASU, Walker Howard, the dynamic incoming freshman, and Garrett Nussmeier. I mean, there's some real interesting options for Brian Kelly and quarterback coach Joe Sloan. And but then the defense has been through so much, and I just wonder if they can take a step forward, even though I like the staff that BK put together on defense. And I think that they're going to win a game, Chris, that catches our attention, whether it's Alabama, whether it's A&M again, you know, whether it's somebody else. There'll be a moment where we kind of perk up a little bit and say, okay, this is interesting, especially where it could be headed in year two or year three, because let's be real honest, Brian Kelly is taking this job to win a national championship. He ultimately didn't think he could get there at Notre Dame. He believes he has everything in place to get there at LSU. Real quick before we wrap up, Chris, another L team is Louisville. Scott Satterfield was ACC Coach of the Year his first year there. You know, things have been a bit shaky since. This seems like an important year for Scott, especially with the new athletic director, you know, coming in at some point with Louisville. What do you see in store for a program that, again, has had talent, and Malik Cunningham is back at quarterback, but after the last few years, it feels like Louisville is entering a pivotal season.
The first thing is what you just said. When you've got a quarterback, a guy that's played as much as Cunningham has, that's a huge equalizer. It levels the playing field based on everything else. I don't know that Scott has ever fully, completely re-endeared himself to the Louisville fans after his flirtation with the South Carolina job. That's the kind of thing that not only fans, but people in administration, you pointed out there's a new AD there, that people have long memories when that kind of thing happens. And as soon as they get a chance, if you don't have a great year to get you, typically they get you. So I think this is a big season for them, certainly for him, you know, to get back in contention in the ACC, to have a chance to be a team that's playing the ACC championship game. You know, there's no reason. I think the ACC has gotten stronger with the rise of NC State. Dave Doran, to me, has done as underrated job there as anybody. You know, what Narduzzi's done at Pittsburgh. We know what Clemson has. So it's gotten better, but I still think Louisville's got to be one of those teams. If he's going to be on solid footing, Adam, they need to make a run this year and be a team in November that's at least playing for a spot in the ACC title game.
Yeah, and it's again, that league with the different variables. We started our conversation with Clemson. You know, can Louisville take that step? You mentioned Florida State, big year for Mike Norvell and his program. And certainly Miami with Mario Cristobal coming in. So the ACC, sneaky, really interesting conference going into this season. Well, Chris, always enjoy talking college football with you. Great great stuff, obviously, from the road at Clemson and South Carolina. And certainly looking forward to your continuing coverage of spring ball as some teams wrap up this weekend. On next week's podcast, we'll probably get into the draft a little bit more. Again, about 2 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft. And we're all excited about that. So that's going to do it for the College Football Podcast. For Chris Lowe, I'm Adam Rittenberg. Thanks for downloading us.